Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Thank you, Vicar. Welcome once again as we gather to share in these shameful sins of others.
Yes.
For another week of confessions from your friends at Greatest Hits Radio.
It's weird how this sort of reverend voice only works for the intro, doesn't it? It never sort of...
Only because it's annoying.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Sister Susie is in the saloon bar.
I am.
Brother Matt is in his gutter.
Correct.
Coming up, Matt tells us how he really feels about our upcoming drive time camping trip in the Confession from the Crypt.
I'm not getting in the tent.
Do you not like
tents? I'm not getting in the tent.
No.
No,
As I look through the parish notice board, more of the confessions that we simply can't do on the radio, and of course, all the confessions from the Hot Rockin' Drive Time Show on Greatest Hits Radio, Monday to Friday, from 4 until 7, including Maggie's House Party Disaster, Hubble Bubble Toil and Trouble, Monty's Saltburn-esque tale, I've been to a marvellous party, Jolly Jack Tar's confession, Can't You Hear Me? SOS. But first, we got all scientific with Nigel's magnetic milk confession. No milk today. My love has gone away.
Simon Mayo's confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
This will probably provoke a little discussion, I imagine.
Oh.
About the Simon and the Holy Collective. Having recently retired as a school science technician, I feel the time is right to confess to an incident that occurred about 10 years ago, quite early in my career. For those who are unfamiliar with the role of a science technician, cast your minds back to your practical science exams at school and the lessons at school. Each time that you walked into a lab and spotted test tubes, chemicals, and exciting-looking pieces of equipment on the desks, it would have been a science technician who had diligently prepared everything, ready for you to conduct your experiments. As I was responsible for all the biology lessons in my school, I would also have the pleasure of preparing plants, flies, maggots, seeds, and sometimes body parts.
Body parts?
Animal, of course.
Oh, right.
For the coming lessons. It's all in the name of biology and science.
Of course it is, yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Frankenstein. At the end of each week, the science teachers would tell me what lessons they were doing the following week so I could prepare everything in good time. One Thursday lunchtime, we all gathered in the science staff room. One of the teachers said to me, "Oh, Nigel, you know that sixth form lesson with the pig's liver that I've asked for next Wednesday? I think I'm doing it on the Monday. Is that okay?" He did talk like that, didn't he?
Yeah.
"No problem," I replied. "I can pick some up on my way in tomorrow and pop it in my prep room fridge over the weekend." At that point, Archie, a physics teacher, piped up, "Make sure you don't put it next to any milk. Ha ha."
Different voice, yeah.
We all looked incredulously at Archie, thinking he'd possibly spent too long with his radioactivity experiments and had, at last, lost his mind. "What are you on about, Archie?" "Don't you know?" he said.
Don't you know?
"I thought everybody knew if you put a piece of liver in the fridge next to a glass of milk, the liver moves towards the milk. You should try it." As we were, in fact, in a room full of science teachers, there were various responses along the lines of, "You're talking rubbish," or words to that effect.
Okay,
I said, "I'll set it up and I'll let you know what happens." So the following day, I placed a slice of liver on a white plate next to a glass of milk in my fridge and took some very scientific photographs involving rulers and stopwatches and left it over the weekend. Upon returning to school on Monday morning, I quickly checked the fridge and observed that the piece of liver was totally and completely unmoved.
Oh, no.
It was at this point, though, I was overwhelmed with an urge to grab a spatula and push the liver just a little closer to the milk.
Yeah.
And I confess, Father Simon, I was unable to resist this temptation. I gave it a little shove, leaving a bloody smear on the plate. I quickly sent a team email to everyone, including the before and after photographs of this amazing phenomenon. I should point out that being just a few years in post and being a little more mature in years, I did have a reputation for being trustworthy and honest, and so my revelation was accepted as fact. There were numerous questions and discussions that week about how to explain scientifically why this should happen. Was it some kind of magnetic effect? Was there some unknown force at work here? Was it something to do with dark energy? Should we be checking our particle theory?
Oh, yeah.
Or was it maybe the work of the devil? Or some evil that was present in the
fridge.
Fridge. Eventually, I did own up to my deception and was greeted with some steely cold looks and shaking of heads for quite a few weeks. Consequently, I did find it hard to regain my credibility, but this was eventually restored for the rest of my time in school. However, several years later, I bumped into our ex-head of chemistry whilst on a course. He informed me he still had not forgiven me. So, Father Simon, I turn to you for forgiveness, not for the majority of my science teaching team, but from you and your esteemed colleagues, and of course from the aforementioned head of chemistry. I miss my colleagues greatly. We had great fun working together. Names have been changed to protect the guilty. Now, the bizarre thing is about this is that this rung a bell with me. There is quite a well-known theory that milk and liver attract. And if you look it up online, what? on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy website, there is a liver milk magnetokinetic phenomenon being discussed. I'm just passing it right. on. That milk is magnetic. The liver doesn't move.
The milk is magnetic.
I'm just passing it on. Anyway, but as far as the sin is concerned, Sister Susie, what do you say to Nigel?
Well, Nigel, I like it. I do think it's very, very funny. But I do feel like, you know, he was in a position of authority in the school. He had a reputation to hold up. Mm. And, you know, it kind of just wasted everybody's time while they try and work out exactly what happened and why. And surely those science teachers should have been doing something better, maybe teaching the children rather than trying to work out why the liver moved towards the milk. And although it's very, very funny, I'm afraid, Nigel, I just simply can't forgive you.
Brother Matthew.
Yes, I've no problem with Nigel using his... So he had this, obviously, this reputation for being totally honest and straightforward, and he used that, didn't he, to be able to pull off this amazing prank. So well done to him. And he managed to provoke discussion
yes.
about theories, and in a way, isn't that what science is all about?
Is milk really? Magnetic when yes. placed in a glass container?
I don't think it is. There's no magnets in my milk, so, and I know that from a fact. I looked this morning, definitely no magnets in my milk.
Yes.
So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
There's a certain rabbit hole of liver milk magnetokinetic phenomena after Nigel's confession. There's definitely something going on.
Is there, though? I'm not sure. I think the jury is very much out.
I might try it out this week.
With some liver.
I don't want to buy any liver.
No, I didn't think so.
That's tasty.
Liver? No, I don't think so.
Do you think
so.
It works with oat milk? We've got some oat milk in the fridge.
Oh, dear.
Could it be anyone's liver?
Oh, no.
Anyway, thanks for that. So let's wander over to the parish notice board. Matt, how are the five-star reviews?
Well, we're only interested in five-star reviews. So here they come. Joe, the deputy head, says, 5 stars, weekly treat. Simon, Matt, Holly, Susie and everyone else. You have changed everything for me as I have to rearrange my weekends to get some alone time to enjoy this podcast in its entirety. I regularly listen to your show during the week, but actively switch off at confession time so that I can have more enjoyment when you're not on the air. I cannot state how much I enjoy Matt scraping the barrel of morality and Simon's accents.
Thank you.
It's amazing how many times Ray Winston happens to be around.
It is.
Isn't it just? 5 stars only because there aren't any more to give. Thanks, Joe. Will says 5 stars. 5 stars. Fantastic pod. Dear the Confessional Quartet, Father Simon, Brother Matt, Sister Susie and Sister Holly, absolutely delighted to see the confessions are back. They're nostalgic as I used to listen to them on the way back from the gym over a decade ago. I'm currently working my way through the back catalogue of confessions, and while I listen in bed, chuckling to myself, they never fail to brighten my day with hilarity. Many thanks for your service. And finally, Bert says, 5 stars. My son, Thomas, and I love listening to the podcast on the school run each morning. It starts the day off perfectly, and we now look forward to Monday mornings. Who'd have thought that? Thank you to the whole team. P.S. Can Thomas have a mug with Simon's mug on it, please? Can he?
I don't know. It's not up to me.
Is that how it works? Just asking within the review?
What do you think, Suze?
Well, he's done it in a review, isn't it? That's very clever.
Yes.
It is innovative, and we could start a trend here, couldn't we?
So are you saying yes?
if we want to give him a mug, I think it's that's quite innovative.
Okay. That sounds like an almost yes.
Bert, it sounds as though the answer is yes, but if nothing ever turns up, it's not our fault.
No, there you go. Now, there was a rumour that someone had left a review that was not five stars.
That's not right.
Which is clearly not going to get a mention on here, and we need even more five-star reviews now to get our average back up. So make sure you are encouraging all your family and friends to give us a five-star review.
Because it only takes one annoying person to just bring the average down.
Oh, dear. Don't we all hate them?
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, we have some correspondence from Canada, Susie.
Yes, we do. We've got an email from Liz, and she says, "Dear Spiritual Collective, five-star review incoming. I used to listen to Confessions way back in the day and practically did a backflip when I discovered you have a new podcast. Having moved to Canada 20 years ago, it's a joy to hear people bare their souls to the masses once more. I've been encouraging my fellow Canadians to give you a listen. The original Confessions book even came with me when I moved.
Oh, good.
Honestly, you've turned my Sunday morning ironing into a less torturous experience. So please, for the sake of my sanity and smooth shirts, don't disappear again."
Well, here's the thing, Liz. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
very nice.
Yeah.
It wasn't our idea. Yeah, we should
emphasise that. Definitely not our plan.
You know. It's kind of out. It's always out of our hands. But as far as we're aware, there's no. Given also, we've only just started.
Yeah.
So you know, I think we're fine. Now on to a request for some mugs, more from more Faith, who says, "Father Simon and the Holy Collective. When I was 9. I was fully converted into a Confessions listener. My dad would burn them onto a CD or my MP3 player once a month for so long that you were the soundtrack of my childhood.
Wow.
We'd listen in the car on our travels, at home over tea, and laugh when talking about previous Confessions too. One of the old favourites is Stephen.
I can't remember that
one. It still gives me a good laugh to say this.
Stephen.
It sounds as though there's some kind of speaking to you from the other side.
Yeah. No, I think it was. I think you're right. Yes, I think that's what it was.
It would need more information, I think. Anyway, I'm so glad that Confessions is back. Not only is it the highlight of my week listening to it, but it brings joy to my dad too. Now that I'm 21 and moving out, with both my dad and I still being avid listeners and Father's Day being around the corner, please could we receive two mugs?
What?
So we can still share the bond, even though we won't be together to listen to you. Thank you for all your dedication throughout the years. Oh, yes. And for being such a, I thought I said boring, being such a bonding point for me and my dad. P.S. Will there be any Olympics specials over the summer?
To which the answer...
What, Olympic Confessions, or are we going to the Olympics?
Well, I think we know the answer to the second of those questions, yes. Which is, no, we're not.
Oh.
Will there be an Olympics-style confession?
We have had Olympic confessions before.
This is a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
There was a confession, and I'm convinced it was something to do with the Commonwealth Games.
Yes.
I think I've told you this before.
Uh-huh.
And you were very disapproving.
Oh, right.
It was Commonwealth Games, and it was an opening ceremony, and it was one of the women's teams who decided that they would do, that. You know, the whole kind of, hello, we're here, the march behind the flag.
Oh, march of the athletes, yeah.
Yeah, and they did it without pants.
Oh.
That's what the confession was.
So, why was I disapproving of that?
Well, because...
During my Puritan phase, clearly. That's right. Yeah.
So, yes, absolutely. If the question is, will there be Olympic confessions, Faith, then yes. Yes, I'm sure that there are all kinds of things that can be confessed.
We'd certainly encourage it, wouldn't we?
Anyway, thank you. So you want two mugs. Susie, do they get two mugs?
Well, do you think they deserve two
yes,
mugs?
Yes, I do.
Really?
I quite like that story.
It's a Father's Day thing.
It's Father's Day, isn't it? That's true, yes.
So you can raise a glass and you can raise a... If we're going to send you the mug, whenever you use the mug, you can raise a glass to us and then also your dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's the way it goes.
That's nice.
If you have your own very, very good reason why you deserve a mug for sharing here, then email confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Quick couple of mentions to Norman Kelly, Stephen Hill, Eddie Howard, Mrs. Huntle, Sol Invictus, and Scragmeister. Some of those got in touch via the extra special way of communicating, which, as you know, is...
Blue Sky! Still going strong.
Blue Sky.
Because these were tweeted and blue skied. I don't think any of them were threaded. Because the secret phrase from last week's podcast was, of course, sick and wrong.
Uh-huh.
Matt will be unveiling a new catchphrase for you to Blue Sky or Twitter.
Correct.
Or X.
Or Thread.
At the end of this particular episode. Or if you see Matt in the street, you can go up to him and hand him the answer on a piece of paper. Is that all right? Does that work?
Yeah, so, no.
Or
money, that's fine.
You go into Susie's pub and say, here you are, Suze, this is for you.
Yeah, if you say the secret word, you get a free pint. How does that work? Excellent. What a great idea.
And a pie.
No. Yes, a pint and a pie for saying the code words. You don't have any pies.
But you can just say, we're all out of pies.
We're all out of pies.
For now.
Also, might not have a house if we give away free pies.
Wasn't that a hit for Air Supply? I'm all out of pies.
I'm all out of pies.
I think so.
Absolutely anyway, without you.
Time for the Not For Broadcast roll call of shame. These are the confessions that got sent to the bin, as there was clearly no hope of them ever making the drive time watershed. We start off with Chrissy. Chrissy, I know you were only 10 and the youngest at the Girl Guides camping weekend. And yes, it wasn't very nice for the bigger girls to be a bit mean to you, but we were never going to read out a confession that involves you getting back at them by putting a piece of your big toenail in the mushy peas of the ringleader.
Oh!
Actually, I would have been very happy to do that one, but obviously it didn't get past Susie, and she is ultimately the one who goes to prison if I say something incorrect on air.
Big toe in the mushy peas.
Just not very nice to have while you're having your tea, is it?
Like, for example, if we talked about a court case and I said, they're definitely guilty, that Susie would be the one that goes to prison.
Correct, yeah.
I'm fine.
No, I mean, I would be in the room, but I would be blameless.
Yes,
but probably Susie have to would not be. Testify against
she
Susie
should have
in court.
Stopped me.
She should have done, yeah. It's all your fault, Suze.
Also,
yeah.
The Pink Panther has been in touch. Wayne and Waynetta do sound like a very annoying couple to be lumbered with on holiday, particularly when Waynetta left some foot shavings behind on your sunbed. Because she was rubbing her feet whilst having a conversation with your husband.
Mm-hmm. there's a lot going on there.
If someone rubs their feet having a conversation with your other half...
But how's that?
There's something going on.
That's not enticing at all.
But anyway, emptying half your sun oil and doing a number one to fill it back up again was never going to be broadcast, was it?
Into the sun lotion?
Yes.
Oil.
That's right.
So how are you managing
some
that?
Sun oil... Well, they will have had one of those kind of sort of opaque brown bottles. So he's got
still very small
suntan oil.
This is not working. It's like maybe the furry liquid thing all over again. It doesn't work.
You could do it through a filter.
A filter? or a funnel or something?
A funnel.
But who has a funnel on holiday? And also, who's scraping their foot to attract a mate? Not me. Certainly not how I met Mrs. Williams.
But I bet she dreamt of it.
She is. Oh. Once I wheeled it out, she was, oh, my goodness.
I love it.
Look at this. He's scraping his foot, everyone.
Anyway, it didn't get on.
No.
Thanks very much. Getting back to those that did make the cut, it's over to Maggie and her 5-inch killer heels with Hubble Bubble, Toil and Trouble.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone.
Today's confession comes from Maggie, Father Simon, Brother Matt, Sister Susie, Sister Holly, in the tack cupboard. Mm-hmm. My confession starts way back in the early 80s. I had just left school at 15, looking forward to no more homework and non-stop partying with friends, because that's what being an adult is all about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our parties tended to be mostly last minute, each other's houses, and carry on to the early hours. We had one friend in our group who we shall call DJ Dave, who provided the entertainment at all of our parties. His only passion was DJing, and his biggest wish in life was to become a famous radio DJ. What kind of a fool dreams of such wonders?
Oh, dear.
DJ Dave liked to spend all his money on the latest gadgets and gizmos, lights that would knock the spots off Blackpool illuminations, or giant speakers that made all the houses in the street shake. Oof. He couldn't wait for the next party to come around where he would surprise us with his latest toy. One Saturday night, with another party arranged, I turned up in my latest fashions, my brand new 5-inch white stilettos and a bottle of Bacardi, which I'd stolen from my mum's drinks cabinet.
Okay.
Rock and roll. Also, it was stashed in a Woolworths carrier bag. How many old cultural references can we get in one sentence?
Yeah.
All ready to meet the usual crowd. DJ Dave was there setting up his decks, and on display was his latest gadget, a bubble machine that had numerous interchanging glass discs, which made pretty bubble patterns on the ceiling, and then they cascaded down the walls. We were easily pleased back in the 80s. You could tell he was proud of his new purchase, as he couldn't stop bragging about how much they cost and that no one else had anything like it or could afford anything like it. No one had anything like it, etc., etc., said blah, blah, blah. I must admit it was a sight to behold, with everybody oohing and aahing at the bubblers, whilst DJ Dave grinned like a Cheshire cat from behind his decks. As the night wore, I bet he wore a shiny jacket.
Definitely. Set that off.
And a bubble perm. As the night wore on and the house became more packed with revellers, people were squeezing themselves into the lounge and we started to resemble sardines in a tin, wanting to dance to the early hours, all getting lost in the cascading bubbles from above. Now, DJ Dave was getting worried about the amount of drunken partygoers who were straying too near the decks, and his bubble machine, in case it got broken or smashed, was constantly shouting and yelling at people to move away, waving his hands in a shooing motion. The party carried on to the early hours, and after a heavy night of hard partying and drinking, people were just starting to pass out on the carpet.
Oh, great. Wow.
This is high class. I knew I needed to be up early, as I'd been reminded by my mum the night before that we were going out for the day and I could not be late home, so I was the first one to wake up. I think that means you're going to be late home. I started looking for my discarded white 5-inch killer heels. I found them and I slipped them on. With bodies sprawled everywhere on the lounge floor, still fast asleep, I tried carefully in my hungover state not to step or trip on any outspread hands or feet of the people on the floor. As the curtains were still drawn, I couldn't really see much in the dimly lit room, and all of a sudden I lost my balance, staggered back, and to my horror, knocked right into the table that housed the bubble machine.
Oh, no.
As I spun round, I could see the machine was starting to topple off the table and hit the floor with a loud bang, but I grabbed it just in time. My relief, Father Simon, was so short-lived as the large glass discs that were situated beside the machine had fallen onto the carpet, and in an attempt to quickly bend down and retrieve them, I somehow lost my footing again and stepped on the discs in the process in my 5-inch killer heels.
Oh, no.
My heart felt like it had been ripped out of my body, overdoing it a bit, and I didn't know what to do. Panicking, I looked around the room at the sleeping bodies and realizing that nobody had seen what I had done or heard the sound of smashing and breaking glass, my only thought was to kick them under the nearest chair, out of sight, dart into the kitchen as though nothing had happened. People were starting to wake up and DJ Dave had emerged from one of the rooms to pack up his decks, lights and bubble machine. I knew the inevitable was coming and it was only a matter of time before the evidence was found. And sure enough, from the direction of the lounge, a loud, piercing scream could be heard from DJ Dave. What the hell's happened to my discs? That's the way they tore back.
They did.
People piled into the lounge, including myself, to see DJ Dave standing with open hands filled with broken and shattered shards of disc. The bubbles were no more. His face looked like he wanted to self-combust. Who would do that? Did anyone want? Everyone shook their heads, including me, not daring to make eye contact, fearing my guilty face would give me away. At that point, I had to slink away. Or wobble away, maybe. Okay. DJ Dave never mentioned it again, and because of that, I knew I'd got away with it. As for the bubble machine, it never made another appearance to any more parties, and neither did my 5-inch heels. Father Simon, I seek forgiveness for the cowardly way I destroyed DJ Dave's prized possession and for the way I disposed of the broken discs, but mostly for not owning up to what I'd done, although I can imagine what Sister Susie has already decided. Having heard what I got up to, ha ha, lol.
Lol.
Well, has Sister Susie already decided after I read that out? I suspect she probably has.
Well, Maggie, I've got a few things here. Mm. I feel like the error you made was when you put your shoes back on in the middle of the room. Because what you should have done, really, is held your shoes and tiptoed over the bodies and then put your shoes on once you got to the door.
Oh,
is
yeah.
that what happens?
Yeah.
That feels like the obvious way to deal with that situation. So, especially if they're 5-inch heels, you can't, you're lucky you didn't stand on someone's yes. arm or limb or anything as you were trying to get them over. But also, I feel like DJ Dave doesn't... Sounds like a bit of overkill for a house party, doesn't it? All of that stuff. And I don't think he sounds like someone that I particularly like to spend any time with. So I feel like for that reason,
oh, right.
maybe I'm on your side, Maggie. I might forgive you.
So you wouldn't book him to appear yes. at the pub. Also, she stole a bottle of Bacardi and we can't approve of that.
No, I mean, obviously, we don't condone that, do we?
No.
That's quite a lot of talk about 5-inch killer heels. They're just shoes, aren't they? That's all they are at the
New
end of the day. They're just... heels with shoes. So I'm going to forgive because I also have my reservations about DJ Dave. Why are you bringing all of this equipment, Dave? No one's impressed. And also, if it's really expensive equipment, don't leave it in a house full of, you know, young people who've had too much Bacardi the night before. You're hostage to fortune there, I think you'll find, Dave. And he didn't use it again, so he learned his lesson. So in a way, we all did. So for that reason, going to forgive.
Confess All. Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast.
A load of twaddle.
Not for the first time.
So that was Maggie's confession and her 5-inch killer heels. She actually got back to us.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
And said, I agree with Sister Susie. Why the heck didn't I tiptoe out of the room barefoot? I didn't think of that at the time. Well, it's so, but, you know, Susie's absolutely... correct on that one.
Yes.
It's the sensible yeah. thing to do.
Yeah.
Don't go clippity-clop. Also, she could have sort of like...
skewered that, someone.
Could have skewered yeah. someone's yeah.
thigh. Yeah. No, they could. Yeah.
She didn't think of that.
No.
Still to come on this here Confessions podcast, we head on a road trip to Yellowstone National Park for the Confession from the Crypt, and there's a cast of what feels like thousands in Monty's confession, I've been to a marvellous party. But not before Jolly Jack Tarr's confession... Can't you hear me? SOS!
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
So today's confession comes from Jolly Jack Tarr. Thank you, Jolly Jack Tarr, for sending this confession in. Simon and the team, as it's the exam season, I thought time has come to confess my dishonest... though in my defence, opportunist behaviour. I'm not sure that's much of a defence, really, but anyway. This was during a mock exam when I was at college. After all these years, I think I need forgiveness. I'm probably slightly older at the time of this confession than the students now sitting exam, so perhaps a little more worldly wise, my sin cannot be justified by the innocence of youth. I joined the Merchant Navy as a deckhand on leaving school, and after a number of years, I decided to enrol in nautical college to become a navigator. Mm. One of the requirements to pass the course was the ability to read and send Morse code at a set speed. The training for this involved the signals lecturer sitting outside the classroom in the corridor, sending Morse to a small light that was fixed above the door. We would all sit there in semi-darkness, attempting to decipher this blinking light. A mock exam was set up prior to the real thing, obviously. So we're a few minutes into the exam and there's a loud commotion outside in the corridor. The little light stops flashing and the lecturer opens the door and says, "Sorry, the other class are fighting again."
Of course they are.
I'll be back shortly. Okay. Being an inquisitive type of person, I popped my head out of the classroom door to see a large melee of fighting youths, followed by our intrepid signals lecturer, and he was heading towards the end of the corridor and he disappeared out of the doors. Now, I didn't have to be Inspector Morse to realise... a bit of mat training there.
Oh, wow.
To realise that the exam wouldn't be starting again for a while. The criteria for passing the exam involved being able to read a block of 20 random letters followed by a message of a few sentences. On returning back to the classroom, I noticed the lecturer's book was open on his desk in the corridor. In keeping with the theme, I had a light bulb moment and a message flashed through my mind saying, "Here's what he's going to send." And I proceeded to copy this and passed it around to all of the other students in the class. Not long afterwards, a rather disheveled lecturer returned apologised for the interruption and says, "I'll start again from the beginning." He's out there busily tapping away in the corridor whilst we're all sat at our desks with thermos flasks, we're eating our sandwiches, drinking coffee and totally ignoring the little light flashing away because we knew what the message was. Just before the end of the exam, we returned ourselves to keen student reading Morse mode and our papers were then handed in and the lecturer, after more apologies for the interruption, takes them away for marking. The following week, he returns to decipher the results. He announces, in a very surprised manner, that everyone's passed with a perfect score. He says, "You got all the block of letters and the message exactly right. Not one mistake or incorrect letter from anybody. But," he said, and there's always a but, "what you wrote wasn't the message I sent. What is going on?"
Oh.
You've given perfect answers to a test I didn't set. He continued repeating, "I'm confused, I'm really confused." Now, I may add that being a nice chap, the lecturer was, with all respect, he was slightly gullible. It never seemed to have crossed his mind that there might be some sort of cheating going on. A full classroom of students sat there watching him, trying to grasp exactly what had happened. He left the room still muttering, "I can't explain it, I just don't know what's going on." It seems that when the fight went through the doors at the end of the corridor, it caused a draft which must have blown the pages of his book of messages over, meaning I copied down the wrong page. In following lectures, he was still in confused bewilderment as to what had actually happened. So Simon, Sister Susie, Brother Matthew and the crew, I'd like to ask forgiveness for not only cheating myself but enabling the whole of the class to benefit from my actions. Obviously, cheating is always wrong and never can be justified. As we all grew up to be navigators, we obviously made sure we could indeed read and send Morse code at speed, and so continue this country's proud history of maritime genius, upon which our very freedoms rely, and I'm sure everyone agrees. I think that's a slightly pompous ending to appeal to our patriotism. Anyway, Jolly Jack Tar sends in a nautical navigating confession. I don't think we've had many of those, so I liked it very much. Sister Susie, what do you say to Jolly Jack Tar?
Well, I just think it's cheating, isn't it? So I don't think I forgive at all because, you know, it shows the cheating doesn't pay because you got it wrong. And how that professor just passed you in anyway is a miracle.
Because actually, they all got everything wrong.
Yeah.
But they were the same with each other, but they were all wrong. Yeah. I just, no forgiveness for me. I think you should have just done it properly because, you know, danger if you didn't do it properly when you actually were doing the actual job.
Yeah. Sounds like a rough old college, doesn't it? If there's the other group are fighting again.
Ugh.
Anyway,
you know what that's like.
Brother Matthew.
I mean, far be it from me to suggest that this professor at the nautical college was a bit thick, but I'm gonna, because how does he not work out that they've copied it? They've all got the same message. So they've obviously copied
it from
And also, this is the reason we have invigilators. This is the reason why you should have had someone in the room. Why have they not thought of this? And somebody's going to take advantage, and Jolly Jack Tar did. And what he did in there was certainly nautical but nice. And for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
No.
Really?
Nautical but nice?
No.
Genius.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Monty. Thank you, Monty. Father Simon and the team. Mike, don't judge on the basis of...
I think I will.
My confession harks back to an incident that occurred in the summer of 1985 and involves my mate Paul's engagement to a young socialite named Sarah. In fairness, Paul and I weren't particularly close, but I became friends with his mother, a big-hearted, if somewhat brassy woman, who we will all affectionately call Mrs. B. In December 1984, I was invited to Paul's birthday party, where we all met his then-girlfriend, Sarah, for the first time. It seemed a very chalk-and-cheese relationship. Paul came from a council estate background. Sarah resided with her wealthy parents in a large six-bedroom house, complete with acres of land and a swimming pool.
Yeah.
But they say opposites attract. Mm. In the summer, I received my invitation to Sarah's estate to attend the couple's engagement party. I couldn't drive at the time, so Mrs. B offered me a lift. Before we set off, Mrs. B showed me an engagement cake she had baked and decorated
to surprise Paul and Sarah. Her cake was covered in thick white icing, decorated with a cascade of marzipan roses coloured with bright red food colouring. Looking at it, you could feel the tooth decay setting in.
Yeah.
But it was a splendid effort. The venue was massive when we got there. Bunting decorated the outside patio and the grounds, and a DJ played loud music around the pool. Sarah's mum, Audrey, highlighted to us and other guests that the upstairs of the house was strictly out of bounds as they're having redecoration work. This included the upstairs bathroom, which Audrey was adamant should not be used by anyone, okay? She then pointed out a downstairs toilet we could use. Mrs. B couldn't wait to show off her cake and opened the Tupperware box to reveal the saccharin-infused cake to Audrey and Sarah's elder brother, Rufus. That, barked Rufus. That looks disgusting. I won't be eating any of that, before disappearing into the bar area. So you've got a big cast here.
Yeah.
Mrs. B looked crestfallen, and I'll be honest, I just wanted to give Rufus a slap, like the rest of us. Audrey then explained that she'd actually commissioned Cousin Deirdre, who owned her own patisserie, to make a surprise engagement cake for the happy couple. But it reassured Mrs. B patronisingly that her cake wouldn't go to waste and would be included in the buffet with the rest of the food. Moments later, a 1980s bright yellow MG Roadster zoomed up the driveway. It was Cousin Deirdre, car top down with said engagement cake nestling in a flimsy cardboard box in the passenger seat. Audrey, Mrs. B and I went over to see. Deirdre took off the lid, proudly showed her creation. It was gorgeous. Delicate mauve sugar paste flowers bedecked a rich white icing piped with soft white clouds and the happy couple's names written in scrolled writing.
Yeah.
Poor Mrs. B looked humiliated. Shall I bring it in? Because Cousin Deirdre spoke like that as well. No, replied Audrey. You know how Sarah likes to hunt for surprises. Leave it in the car and park it round the side of the house. Out of sight. It's shady there. As Cousin Deirdre drove the car off, I took Mrs. B inside to console her with a bottle of baby sham that she'd brought with her.
Oh,
at some
nice.
Point, I have to say I needed the toilet, and as instructed, went to the downstairs bathroom, only to find it locked in a small queue, and I was bursting. I took a chance and slowly crept upstairs, but as I reached the bathroom, I heard snoring. Opposite the bathroom, Rufus had collapsed in a drunken stupor on what looked like a chaise longue. There's a song in there. I briefly hesitated, but desperate, entered the bathroom and closed the door behind me. The bathroom seemed okay. The toilet was in working order. I did my business, flushed, washed my hands, and checking no one other than Rufus was outside, beat a hasty retreat from the bathroom, closing the door behind me. I made it down the stairs without anyone seeing me, with all the stealth of a master ninja, and no harm was done. Until about an hour later, when Paul and Sarah finally arrived to great cheers from the assembled crowd, and Audrey tipped the nod to Cousin Deirdre to collect her glorious creation. And it was then we all heard the screams. Audrey led the charge, followed closely by Mrs. B, Paul, Sarah, and myself. We ran out to the side of the house where Cousin Deirdre's open-topped car was parked and where she was wailing uncontrollably. It was then the full horror of my actions became apparent. Cousin Deirdre had parked immediately below the overflow pipe of the bathroom that I had been in when I flushed the toilet. What I hadn't realised was that said toilet had a faulty flush mechanism, meaning that the cistern kept filling up and wouldn't switch off. Consequently, water was now cascading from the overflow pipe immediately into the little yellow roadster, specifically the passenger seat upon which Deirdre's precious cake was. The water had been pouring out for some time and the flimsy box was now a disintegrated, soggy mess of cardboard and the top of the cake a melted, congealed mess. "Who used the upstairs bathroom?" shrieked Audrey loudly. Her response was met by a stunned silence. And it was then that Sarah's dad appeared, dragging Rufus behind him. "I found this little Herbert upstairs," he declared. Audrey demanded to know if he'd used the forbidden toilet. Rufus said, "Dunno, might have. What's the big deal?"
His voice has changed.
I know. To which Cousin Deirdre responded by launching at him with her handbag. "Serves him right," whispered Mrs. B. "Now I can use my cake." Anyway, the rest of the day was fraught, to say the least. All I wanted to do was leave. To make matters worse, Rufus was forced to clear up the mess.
made by the cake's destruction, Paul and Sarah split up a month or two later.
Oh.
Not as a consequence of my actions, but the fact that they were the most mismatched partnership since Sam Fox and Mick Fleetwood presented the Brit Awards.
Oh, yeah.
And also due to Paul having an affair with an office girl called Karen.
Oh. Oh, well,
and they're happily married now. Anyway, Father Simon, Brother Matt, Susie, I don't ask forgiveness from Audrey, Sarah or Paul. And on hindsight, I don't want forgiveness from the rude and obnoxious Rufus. I do want forgiveness from Cousin Deirdre. I made a mess of her beautiful cake, her car, and stole her moment to shine. And I throw myself at your collective feet for a little bit of mercy, whatever's going. Do you have any mercy with you, Sister Susie?
Oh, do you know what? I don't know if I do have mercy for Monty, but there's a few things in here that, first of all, I have issue with. And that is, I know, obviously, Cousin Deirdre's cake got destroyed and her car got destroyed, but why did she leave the roof open when she parked? Surely that's the first thing you do, is pop your roof back up, because what if it rained?
I don't know, maybe the forecast said it wasn't going to rain.
But yeah, I don't know. But that, first of all, that. But yeah. I do feel for Mrs. B. There's a lot of pressure when you make a cake, isn't it? And, you know, you just... And she was only trying to be lovely.
Yes.
And I feel like, I don't know, Rufus wasn't very nice either. So I don't think he'd... I just feel like I'm going to have to forgive Monty because, I don't know, the other people weren't very nice either. So maybe they got what they deserved.
It was a story populated by people that you wouldn't want to hang out with.
Oh, quite right, yes. I wouldn't spend any time with Rufus and his ilk. Why aren't they fixing the toilet if they've got a swimming pool? That's what I want to know. No point in having a swimming pool if you can't fix your lav. Other point is, well, who leaves a cake in the car? Because if you put the top on the car, then the cake's going to melt. If you leave the top off the car, then, you know, water's going to come in, or squirrels or other things are going to come in and ruin
it.
Don't leave hamsters, a deer could come into the car. There's no point in leaving the cake in. It makes no sense. And maybe that's why they didn't fix the lavatory, because
For
that reason, I'm going to give.
I think a deer would possibly get into the car park and steal your cake.
Into what? Through the sunroof? It would have to get through the sunroof, wouldn't it?
Yes. Leave the sunroof open, the deer will come and spoil the cake.
Yeah.
Therefore,
attracted by the icing in the marzipan. They're mad for the marzipan, famously.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, marzipan is disgusting.
What? No, I think you're fine.
Everybody,
no. I made a cake with marzipan last night. It was superb.
No, I don't think so. False consciousness. Let's do a memory lane trip with this particular confession from the crypt. It comes from Gary. Gary, thank you very much for getting in touch. Simon, I'd like to request a confession from 2021. It was from Mrs. Bear and involved camping in Yellowstone Park with some annoying camping neighbours who brought a guitar and some moonshine. Okay. I laugh so much as I've been in a similar position to Mrs. Bear whilst camping, and I would love to hear it again. Okay, Gary, thank you very much indeed. So, successfully converted from a mini disc that we found down the back of Matt's sofa, we've turned it into a lovely, shiny new WAV, and here it is. Mrs. Bear's confession, we're going on a bear hunt. It's going to be a big one. We're not scared. We're going on... That's enough.
Okay, right.
Something to confess... Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's comes from Mrs. Bear. Thanks, Mrs. Bear. Dear Simon and the Absolution Assembly, which I like that. That's good.
I do like that.
As my children reach maturity, I feel compelled to unburden myself of this confession dating back over 10 years. At the time, our family had been living in America, a wonderful and exciting experience for the family, but which had come to an end and we were heading home. As a last hurrah, we had planned a road trip, ticking off some of the as-yet unexplored highlights that the country has to offer. One of these was the spectacular geological wonder that is Yellowstone National Park.
Oh, nice.
As a footnote, you should appreciate that at the time our children were smallish, they were under 10, and that my husband, whilst externally appearing to be a grey-suited businessman, actually has the heart of someone such as Bear Grylls. Also, he would have you think. Thus, Bear, as we shall call him for this story, decided that the only authentic experience was to spend some nights under canvas in Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah.
One of the key appeals to the family was the spectacular array of wildlife at the park, including black and grizzly bears, bison and wolves. I am a reluctant camper at the best of times, and sleeping in this animal-infused environment filled me with dread, but for the sake of the rest of the family, I agree.
Bison?
Bison.
And that's the one that you're scared of?
I thought they were extinct. Wolves. But
they're very big from what I mean, I'm not a bison expert.
Anyway, it's a rare appearance of bison and grizzly bears in a confession. So we pitched our tent in a scenic campsite, cooked supper over open coals, paddled in the sulfuric-smelling creek, and smiled agreeably at our camping neighbours. The highlight of this particular part of the trip was to wake before dawn the next morning to go and spot wolves. So we packed...
Yes. Very exciting. I'm not getting in the tent! I'm not getting in the tent! I'm not getting in the
You're
tent.
You're not getting in the tent.
Bison and bears.
Wolf spotting.
So we packed up our provisions and placed them all in the bear-proof storage bins, threw our rubbish into the similarly bear-proof trash cans, and hunkered down for the night, ready for an early start, having turned down the offer of a drink from our friendly neighbours, who we are now going to call the Waltons. I can only describe what followed as the longest night of my life. The Waltons turned out to be two brothers and their families, who had clearly been trying some of the local moonshine. Along with their guitar, the moonshine seemed to imagine going camping with a guitar.
And wolves.
Along with their guitar, the moonshine seemed to imbue the Walton brothers with some remarkable songwriting skills. Yeah. As the night progressed, so did the songs, culminating in one entitled Brothers in the Buff.
What?
Which has stayed with me to this day.
Amazing.
I want to hear that.
My family slumbered around me, I enjoyed every glorious rendition until after approximately 10 minutes sleep, I was woken up by my Bear Grylls husband, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, raring to go on our wolf safari. After a fabulous trip, watching wolf cubs frolic at dawn, we arrived back at the campsite for breakfast. Sadly, by this stage, Mrs. Bear, that's me, was rather more a bear with a sore head, and it was in this rather uncharacteristic state of mind I decided to wreak my revenge. After breakfast, I asked the children to throw the debris in the trash bins. As the bear cubs rushed off to do it, I followed with the instruction, please make sure you slam the bins shut as loudly as you can.
Yeah.
At that young age, they complied without question and vigorously slammed the metal bins as noisily and frequently as they could. Okay, keep going, I said, and also shout, hoorah, hoorah. So they did that too. Now, bang and shout, we're going on a wolf hunt, it's going to be a big one, we're not scared, and so on. What a noise they made, Father Simon. Okay, let's round it off. And here I rattled my brain for a family favourite, with Postman Pat. So we all sang Postman Pat and his black and white cat with the important line, early in the morning, just as day is dawning, and so on. Anyway, a few moments later, the Walton brothers emerged from their tent, an interesting shade of green, and singing no more, hallelujah. They said something like, the traditional sound of unwellness. Shame, huh? Anyway, I need to confess, Father Sam, I need to confess my crime of misappropriation of parental authority. With apologies firstly to the majority of the residents of our Yellowstone campsite that night, awoken prematurely by some rather antisocial bin banging, and secondly to my poor innocent bear cubs, who were conduits for my vengeful rage. I do not, however, apologise to all the Walton brothers, who unsurprisingly seem to fail to reach fame and fortune with their song Brothers in the Buff. Unfortunately, I can't tell you how Brothers in the Buff goes, but it's obviously quite a fine tale. It stayed in Mrs. Bear's head. Thankfully, it's not in ours. Let's check in then with the voice of moral responsibility, Sister Susie from the pub.
Oh, Mrs. Bear. Do you know what? I think I'm in a forgiving mood tonight because I think I agree with you. I think that would be highly annoying if I was camping. Even with some earplugs, moonshine and guitars purely would be just too noisy. So I think I'm going to forgive you.
Go on holiday
occasion.
With a guitar. It's an unforgivable sin. Anyway.
I do take my ukulele with me.
Oh, dear me.
Really?
Brother from another gutter?
Not going camping with Suze. Okay. Right, I mean, obviously, never take your guitar anywhere and definitely never bring it out uninvited.
and say, oh, it's a bit late, think I'll bring out my... No, no, nobody wants to hear you on your guitar, Gerald. Also, why are you camping under canvas when they're even making the bins burr-proof? That's your sign! Don't be in anything less than metal if it's going to be burr-proof bins! Oh, dear, oh, dear.
And so therefore,
everything you get, definitely forgiven.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
I think there should be lots of rules about camping, and one of them should be do not bring your musical instruments with you.
Definitely don't do that.
Unless you're a cowboy. Or a folk singer.
No,
like properly.
No, like what does properly... Properly yeah. doesn't mean you've...
Well,
if you've
got... You define that.
Well, for example, if you are Ralph McTell...
Okay.
Then... You're allowed to go camping with a guitar.
Lead me through the streets of...
yes, wherever.
Keswick.
I think... do you know that song? It was originally about Paris and then switched it to London. I was watching this Yellowstone TV series.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there is a like a cowboy guy who's got a guitar. You think this is going to be trouble. Anyway, then he sings a song. I was thinking, hang on, that sounds like Ryan Bingham, who is a... country singer.
Uh-huh.
And I looked up and it's Ryan Bingham. So if you are Ryan Bingham or a country artist you have recorded your own record.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. Yeah. And you've got the guitar.
Then you can
go
on holiday with a guitar. No one else. Sorry, Suze, you need to leave your ukulele. No one wants...
No.
Imagine what people felt like when you got your ukulele out.
Oh, dear.
They loved it.
Well, they said they did.
I couldn't do bass.
But actually, they absolutely hated every moment of it. If you have a confession you'd like to hear again, or if you have a confession that, you know, you think deserves forgiveness, then we read it out on the show. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. And if we do use it, you get a smart speaker. Now over to Brother Matt for this week's secret code phrase.
And the secret code phrase this week is sexy foot scrapings. That's sexy foot scrapings.
I get all these messages.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. No, that's why I always choose the most risque.
So if you've listened this far, you can tweet me at Simon Mayo on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Simon Mayo on Threads, which it does look... I'm looking at it now, it does look like Mrs., but it is Mr. Simon on Threads.
Right, yeah.
And also on Blue Sky.
Yeah, all of those.
Where the cool kids are.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to follow, like, and subscribe. Tell everybody that the Confessions podcast is back. Until next time, from the pub, this is Sister Susie.
Time to go home.
From the gutter, it's Brother Matthew.
Yes, goodbye.
Thank you for listening. Send your confessions in. We'll see you next week.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
And Holly's just walked in.
Holly's back, everyone.
Where did you go?
Oh, just popped to the shop.
Did you buy us a treat?
No, I bought a Snickers for myself.
Just for yourself.
She's bought some chocolate just for herself. Okay.